Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 10th, 2010. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. And this week's show's topic is Wrecking Cities, Godzilla Has Nothing on Obama. Now, to discuss this and the situation in the United States, we have a coast-to-coast panel of two people. I'm glad to welcome from Los Angeles, from the LaRouche Political Action Committee there, Tarana Dorsey. Welcome, Tarana.
Thank you, Marcia.
Good. Hi. And I'm checking our sound level. It sounds fine. And on the East Coast, I'll say that we are very glad to have, from a hot situation of the National Governors Association Conference in Boston, an organizer with the Rachel Brown for Congress campaign, who was also on here the a few days after Rachel Brown was certified as on the ballot in order to get rid of Barney Frank in the upcoming election. Now, that's Miles Robinson. I don't know if he's been able to join us yet. Miles, we welcome you. Are you with us?
Yes, Marcia. I just got on. Hi.
Great. Thank you, Miles. And I'm going to say in advance, I mentioned the National Governors Conference. As we know, that's pre-scheduled for almost years in advance. They have one or two of them a year. This is the 102nd National Governors Association Conference in Boston, about 40 governors. But we can safely say that this is unique because of it occurring in this disintegration of the international financial system, but in particular with July 1st being the end of the financial year for most states, many cities, not all, we have a particular moment of breakdown amidst the general international collapse that's taking place. Plus, because July 1st is part of our 4th of July national birthday, it turns out that Congress goes on recess, fair enough. But before that, they did the particular disgrace of not even of reneging on just extending unemployment benefits for millions of unemployed. They reneged on just extending a certain amount of money for the medical care for the poor called Medicaid. So I'm not going into a briefing now because we have time constraints on Miles Robinson being with us. But this, Miles, let's start with you. Could you also tell us how long you can be on and where you are? Are you on in the venue of the conference? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm at the hotel where it's taking place right now, and this is the first time I've been to a conference of the National Governors Association, and I assume most of the time they have pretty tight security, given the fact that all the nation's governors are in one place, but because of the breakdown, which you're describing, it seems like what they have going on this year is rather unusual, and we have yet to actually be able to talk to anybody at the conference because the security is so tight. We're acquiring press passes, et cetera, as we speak. But I think that the important thing to stress is that the context of this is happening in a period where the governors are incredibly unpopular. So there's obviously heightened security as a result of that, the mass strike dynamic, which is also kind of the other aspect to this conference, which is happening outside of the hotel and in other locations of the city. I can tell you yesterday, one thing we did have a lot of success organizing at was a protest organized by the Boston PD for law enforcement officials all across Massachusetts who came in to protest Governor Deval Patrick's cuts for the fire departments and the police departments, most specifically. I mean, these are departments of the state government, which he basically promised were not going to be touched. And to show you the way in which he shares Obama's Chicago roots, the way in which he does a lot of this stuff, the Massachusetts budget, which was cut $29 billion, was passed literally hours before the July 1st deadline of national budgets. And Deval Patrick rammed it through after getting the mayors of the cities to alter their budgets to take into consideration the cuts that he had not publicly announced. So a lot of the mayors forced through cuts the city council at the last minute to allow the state to pass these cuts, which were drastic cuts for communities, drastic cuts for cities, drastic cuts for state police. And, you know, there's just a general ferment, which is in line with what LaRouche has been referring to as the mass strike process. But there's a general ferment around this particular conference where the irony is that there's a lot of security personnel here who probably have friends or family who are on the other side of the protest, as they're protecting the interests of the governors whom the law enforcement officers are all protesting outside and in other parts of the city. So there is kind of this heavy air inside the conference on security matters, and it's obviously because of the fact that these governors are, especially the more hardcore of these governors, like Schwarzenegger and Deval Patrick, to a certain extent, are really showing their willingness to cut people's throats in order to save a buck. And, you know, a better policy for these states, instead of going along with Obama's budget cuts, because Deval and Obama are close, and I don't doubt that he probably personally talked Deval Patrick through some of the cuts that he had to make, kind of coaching him that, you know, now's the time for strong, tough leadership or garbage like this. A better orientation for these governors would be to actually try to buck this trend and come out and demand a policy like the Glass-Steagall approach for a top-down federal reorganization of the entire economy. And that would work. Instead, these governors seem to be in lockstep with the fascism coming out of Washington. And in that sense, there's an element of it which is probably their stupidity. There's an element of it which is the strong-armed nature and fascist nature of this administration. But then there's also an opening for our work, and because a lot of these governors are just confused, and they probably don't want to make the cuts that they're making. They don't want the protests outside. They don't want the bad publicity, per se, and they really need our leadership. So that's the approach we're taking at this conference. It's the approach we're taking this weekend, that we have something very unique to present to these people, and they really need to get on board with our fight.
Well, that's great. Let me ask you, Miles, right at the outset here, do you think you can stay on for the hour, or you'll know when your colleagues get back to you about the plans for the conference? Do you know yet?
No, I don't think I can stay on for the hour. I think I might have about 20 minutes of juice in my cell phone, so I do want to get back into this.
Tarana and I'm sure, Tarana, you agree. Let's continue some with Miles's report. And then we know we have the remaining 40 minutes or so to get all that we want to hear from you, especially about California, okay? So
yeah.
Sticking with and Tarana, maybe you feel free to put questions also to Miles. But Miles, the national network television, and everyone should look on the LPAC TV, LaRouchePAC.com. And they can see reports of posted over the last 24 hours, video of the police demonstration at Fenway Park in front of at this governor's social event. We saw Rachel Brown campaigning on the street, and you know, the weekly report that LPAC does on the campaign, Down with the Traitors, also has a special. But what some of the people you talked to on the scene yesterday. If you want to describe some, even though the governors are in this lockstep position mostly, what does the general public say, if you can reach them? And also many of the towns I know you've been visiting in the last 2 weeks. What's the reaction?
Well, I mean, I think that in a certain sense, the visual images probably speak for themselves and really do a lot to characterize what the mood of the population is. I mean, if you see the footage of these angry police officers, they look, you don't really want a lot of police officers that are pissed off at the leadership at the state level. I mean, you want people who are involved in security to be, just like you would want teachers and other people involved in education to be pretty well taken care of for the needs of themselves and their families, because they provide a very valuable service to the society. And you need that sense that that is being reinforced at the level of leadership and also the level of funding. These people are confused. They don't know why they're being thrown to the sharks. And obviously the biggest elephant in the room is the bailout, because here you have the orientation of the United States and this administration is to give trillions and trillions of dollars in blank check form to the financial derivatives and other useless papers sitting in Wall Street, London, the Cayman Islands, and the international financial institutions. And the people who are providing incredibly valuable services to the functioning of a society, just overhead, basic overhead services to the functioning of a society, are being cut. And that's leading to, besides the enraged emotions that you would expect, or the emotions related to rage, you have people who are pretty confused. They see the very basis of that which allows a society to function to be sacrificed for something which is incredibly not important, like Wall Street. And so, you know, that kind of compounds the rage a bit. And what these people really need is they need to know what to do. They need a mission. They need a political mission. They need to be able to fight for something that's actually going to work. And a lot of the discussion around this National Governors Association conference is a controversy with Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, who obviously passed a controversial law trying to deal with illegal immigration.
Right.
That's really not an issue that deserves to be discussed, because it's a function of something much greater. And to the extent in which people don't see that, they're being misled. So, I mean, with the protests on the streets, you get a lot of this just general confusion where people see, or they're looking for a scapegoat. They're looking for something simple to explain to them why the whole basis of the society, which they thought was solid, is now coming down, crashing around them for reasons which really involve the ideas and assumptions and policies and intentions, which LaRouche always points out, really what's driving the process of history. The intention from the very beginning was to collapse the basis of the society. So therefore, the collapse of that society itself is not an effect. It is an effect, but it's an intended effect. And if people really understood that, and then the solution, the rage would be transformed into something a lot more useful, which is a certain enlightened sense of what the problem is and therefore what the solution must be. And they wouldn't go running around trying to point their finger at illegal immigration or something like that as like the cause of the problem. And if only we solved that, everything else would work itself out. And I think a lot of people see through that. They're just pissed off, and they want some type of sense that this is going to get better. And unfortunately, and fortunately, we're the only ones that can give it to them. And we just have to work our butt off and win, because otherwise, people are getting a real sense it's hitting home, you know. This crisis is not something which is over there. It's not a collapse which is weeks or months away or something like this, but it's now. It's happening. People are living through it and they're suffering through it. And, you know, they're doing something about it. It's just we need to make sure that they're doing more.
And let me...
That's exciting.
Yes, that's right. Tarana, do you have anything? I had another question, but go ahead if you do.
Yeah, well, one thing, Miles, what is going on in terms of the organizing around the Glass-Steagall? What are you finding? How are you communicating that as an idea to people?
Well, Rachel just put a statement together, which is very good. It's going after Barney Frank, and it's really focusing on the Glass-Steagall question. And, I mean, this is really the most important thing to get across to these people. Is that without a national solution, and without something that, in a large part, Obama is diametrically opposed to, almost by instinct, anything which will go against the Wall Street financial, London-based financial establishment. And it really does lead into the other aspect of what has to be done right now, which is impeaching this bum and getting Obama out of there. Because, you know, not for anything necessarily that he has done, although there are many, but what he's preventing. And the Glass-Steagall policy really is central to that. And people are responding to it. I mean, I know that was the thrust of our organizing yesterday with the police officers. It's going to be the thrust today in another protest that's occurring in Boston with the same law enforcement officials. And, yeah, I mean, the leaflet that we're getting out also includes the resolution on it, which is a continued fight for both the campaign nationally and here in Massachusetts. That we've got to get, we're going to use the campaign, in other words, as a vehicle to get this Glass-Steagall policy in now, to get the impeachment of this president now. And people react to the campaign differently because it's not about Rachel Brown's political future or something like this, but we're going to use the momentum of the mass strike process. We're going to use our ideas to transform that. And it's very clearly defined. It's very clearly outlined in this Glass-Steagall approach, exactly what you dispose of first, what you put in place of, what you put in place first, and how to get kind of a negative and a positive solution. You throw out these derivatives, start protecting the financial system that can actually function for small towns, for small businesses, and then get a national direction, an Apollo-style, a national mission to actually build up our nation's economy. And that's, you know, not a quick fix or anything like this. A lot of people, they would like it to be that, but they kind of understand that the gravity of this situation doesn't lend itself to be fixed in some quick and overly expedient way. I think at this point, if they're promised that, they're a little weary.
And one thing is that let me ask, in the response over time to people in some of the towns, whether it's New Bedford or some of the New England towns going way back a couple of years to the drive beginning in 2007 for a firewall against this speculative crap and in favor of useful credit with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Do you find some people identify the enemy more? I know you have a video on Two Massachusetts, but are people seeing that Mr. Obama is being run out of London? He's an alien operation or what?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the incident that really underscores this is the oil spill in the Gulf.
Okay.
Which is really resonating up here, specifically in places like New Bedford, which are fishing communities, and kind of see the slow crawl of this sludge up the coast of the Atlantic to inevitably be sitting on their doorstep. They really get a sense that, yeah, I mean, this is an alien policy. I mean, before it was definitely this guy's an alien. It wasn't necessarily clear that he's a British agent as such, but we're really able to clarify that for people. And the British petroleum question is really biting in that sense, because, I mean, Obama's instinct from the very beginning was to try to cover up and preserve the interests of this corporation when the livelihood of his constituents was the first to suffer. So, yeah, I mean, and we do have this added historical resonance where people get a real sense that, you know, our enemy has been the British for quite some time. And people in Massachusetts know that. You know, they have their great-great-great-grandfather's musket on the mantle or something like this. They have a living memory, a real institutional memory here in the population of precisely what we fought against. And they see that in Obama. We just kind of have to, it's very easy for us to connect the dots for them, because they get a real sense that something has gone horribly wrong. And it's not the Constitution as such. It's the fact that we haven't used the Constitution. We haven't used the institutions of the United States. We haven't been acting American. And the British is kind of always there as the antithesis of that in their minds.
Right. And the scene at the National Governors Conference, although, as you say, the context is certainly that It's to put it mildly, the governors who are implementing austerity are definitely unpopular. I mean, they are the enemy, but it's an enemy policy. But is it the case you have these gigantic signs with Obama, with his mustache? Can you, is that what, what's, are you in the neighborhood of the conference or at the demonstrations? What have you been up to?
At the demonstrations, yeah. We have been organizing very, very aggressively around around the mustache and around the message which Lynn has been putting out. But these, just to kind of get some background, these protests
okay.
are happening a little further away from the hotel.
Uh-huh.
Although the general sentiment in the population is not something which people here don't know. So, yeah, we are definitely going strong with this message, and we're getting a lot of positive response. That's for sure. And people are really starting to see the Rachel Brown campaign as the on-the-ground force to actually organize this. They're starting to recognize us. We're really starting to move some major, getting some real headway with the population. They're really starting to recognize our activity. Hear about us from a friend or something like this. They really getting a sense that we're an ever-present type of force. It's really
right.
good.
That's great. And you might, I'm concerned if the cell phone trans connection doesn't hold up or something. Do you want to get anything in before the time in which you have to get off, including about upcoming activities or aspects of the campaign, including the website? Anything you want to say now?
Yeah, on the 17th, we're having a conference in New Bedford, and listeners should contact the campaign office for more on that or check the website, rachelforcongress.com. This conference is going to be historically situating the fight here in Massachusetts for a republic of the United States of America. It's how Massachusetts became the epicenter of a fight to establish a republic. And that discussion is going to take the form of an all-day conference down in New Bedford. And we're inviting everybody to come out to that. It's going to be incredible. We're inviting some people up you might recognize from the website team. We're having some real in-depth discussion. Some in-depth work has been done to flesh out for people really accessibly exactly what it is that makes this nation, really, what makes this nation unique. And we have to revive that. So I think it's a good forum. It's going to be a really serious day, really exciting day of events, and people should definitely come out for it. Then August 5th, we're having a concert in the northern part of the district in Brookline. That's going to be specifically focused on the German leader work, but also with some choral pieces, and it'll be an all-evening concert done by the staff of the campaign. So people should come out to that, too.
Right, and I'm sure you want volunteers to come out and just spend their summer. If they can't spend their summer with summer in California, Toronto, they can go to Boston.
Right. They already are. We have three on their way right now.
Oh, great. Oh, to Boston or to San Francisco?
From California to Boston.
Well, good. And people who are listening to this, I can't say any more, but go for it. Do you have any final questions, Tarana, of aspects of all of this you care to put, or?
No, that's okay. Great. Have fun, Miles.
Yes.
Yeah,
and Thanks
a lot.
Thank you for taking the time, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sounds good. Bye.
Bye. Okay, thanks, Tarana. We can turn now to the West Coast. Not that we're not confined geographically, but I just would like you to definitely sketch in all the work you and your colleagues have been doing in the many, many, I mean, California is like an economy of the world in its own right. It's so large, so populous, and potentially productive, except under Schwarzenegger and the world collapse. It's a mess. But you've been going to towns, you've interviewed a leader of a small town that's, by the way, in the national wires connected it's called Maywood, California, in Los Angeles County, connected to the governor's conference. It's mentioned as one of the places that lost on July 1st 68 employees at one blow. Would you give a picture of what's going on, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, to start, as you mentioned, California is really ground zero for the brunt of the economic collapse. Not to say that it's the only place that it's happening, but it's really the front edge, the cutting edge, to put it crudely, of the economic collapse. And not just for mysterious reasons, but for very clear political reasons concerning Schwarzenegger's history, how he was brought in, which I'm sure we'll cover in the rest of this show.
Definitely.
But right now, we've been... Some of the Rouge Pack youth organizers here in Los Angeles have been involved in a pretty intense mobilization on particularly the city council level to rally support for the Glass-Steagall Act. And we've sort of renewed it in a resolution that we're submitting to city councils across Los Angeles County and across Orange County, and then also with the Summer Shields campaign up in the Bay Area in San Francisco, they're also involved in this mobilization. In fact, this is really a nationwide mobilization for the Glass-Steagall, but this is something that we've been pretty heavily engaged in here in Los Angeles. And really what we've been doing the last few weeks is attending city council meetings, submitting public comment, and then just engaging in dialogue with the different city council members or any other city officials, fire and police force members, all to rally their support and really organize them around this Glass-Steagall resolution as being the only solution to the kind of cuts and horrors that they're living out right now. And I can just go through a few sort of empirical examples of what we've found, and then we can maybe get more into what the Glass-Steagall resolution is. Okay, so I mean the as you mentioned, the sort of front page example is the city of Maywood, which is a very small city, kind of wedged in LA County between a lot of other cities, and it's it has a very large population density, even though it's relatively small. A lot of immigrants coming in. And this is a city that we were involved in going a couple years back to the mobilization around the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act that LaRouche had come out with in the wake of the so-called subprime mortgage crisis or, you know, blowout when all these banks were collapsing overnight, like people remember Bear Stearns, etc. And at that time, we had come out, done a similar thing on the city council level, pushing for this, pushing support for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which would have essentially put a freeze, an immediate freeze, on all foreclosures of homes to avoid a social crisis, which we're seeing spiraling out of control now, and address the completely bankrupt financial system and essentially it put a halt to the bailout and allow for a sifting out of the trillions of dollars of toxic waste, derivatives, et cetera, from those assets which still had any kind of real physical economic value. And at that time, we had engaged in contact with a city council member who was also the mayor of the Maywood City Council. His name is Sergio Calderon. And at that time, he had personally endorsed the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. We had been in dialogue with him then, interviewed him. He became a member of the LaRouche Political Action Committee. So he's somebody that we've been in dialogue with for quite a while now. And that's pretty evident in the interview that I was able to carry out with him recently that's featured on the LaRouche PAC website, so people can watch it there for the full picture. But just to give a sort of a sense of what happened in Maywood, you know, on the news, the media sort of reports the police force and the loss of the police force, but it's really a loss of the function of a city, because every function, every board that the city council has jurisdiction over, or the majority of the significant ones, are being assumed by into the jurisdiction of other surrounding cities. So it is the police force, but it's everything. It's the entire jurisdiction of the city. And so even though the city isn't officially unincorporated, it essentially is. It has basically a sitting council that has jurisdiction over nothing. And you can see in the interview I saw, you know, when I was interviewing Mr. Calderon, that the impact of this is something immeasurable or almost unable to be communicated. And just hearing the numbers of people, the numbers of police officers and their families that were laid off, you can really see that this is something far more damaging than just sort of losing a certain amount of jobs. This has implications for the security of the city. Now the city is really only being patrolled by the Los Angeles Police Department, Los Angeles County Sheriff. So you could imagine what the implications of that would be for crime, dealing with crime, dealing with other matters, and the kind of response time that you would see from the county dealing with situations that arise rather than having a police force there on the ground. And the kind of impact that this had on Sergio was also evident from what he was recounting of the giving up of the watch, you know, where they disbanded the police force, and the kind of emotional effect that has on somebody who grew up their whole life, 33 years in that city, and is watching sort of the dissolution of the entire infrastructure, physical and otherwise, of the city. And that's just, you know, that's just Maywood, but this is happening at every city council meeting that we're going to. Just to give a few more examples, I attended the city council meeting of La Habra, and there's been a huge fight going on there between the police force and the city, where, you know, they've been in negotiation for a long time now. They've already taken extra furlough days, etc., and recently they were trying to cut the CalPERS, which is the California Public Employees Retirement Fund, for public, you know, retirement for public employees, obviously. And the police, the whole police force of La Habra, was in attendance at the city council meeting, and some of their family members. And it was really just very evident the kind of tragedy that's unfolding, where the city council members were all saying, we really don't want to do this. This is obviously really difficult. You know, it's kind of the double-edged sword, where we can either increase the furlough days or we can cut into the retirement, and we really don't see any other way around this. But hopefully at some point in the future we'll have some more money, and, you know, we won't have to make these kinds of decisions. But in that level, there is no way out, and there will be no solution that just comes above magically, you know, more money that just drops down on these cities, which is, you know, what some of these city council members are just, you know, kind of hoping for, because they don't see any other solution. So it just makes it all the more powerful when we come in and kind of raise the level of discussion out of the city level, which is, you know, in the past when we had come to these city councils, they would sort of criticize us for addressing national issues that are out of their jurisdiction and it's too big for them. And now it's a refreshing, it's a breath of fresh air when we come in and bring the discussion that otherwise has no solution on the local level except for just increased cuts, continued cuts and horrors and, you know, just all the implications of these things, to the level of the only solution being on the national level, that they can fight for this, they can come out with support for it as a body and as individuals, and not just to put their name on a resolution, but that they can become part of our political force, that they can actually know the solutions and begin to actively themselves know and organize for them. And we're getting that kind of response. It's far more open. It's a, just a completely different kind of process than when we had approached a lot of these city councils a few years ago.
Well, that's great. And the picture you give is very clear. Let me just announce, to give a public notice here to our listeners, to make sure they look on you can look a couple of places. You can look on LaRouchePub.com, but look on LaRouchePAC.com and see the weekly report that LaRouche does for his political action committee occasionally, and he did it this week, to say that there is a leadership body, himself as advisor, and people coming together domestically and internationally, standing ready to initiate the emergency measures that Tarana, you're just discussing mobilizing to force the opportunity for in this country. So people should look at that weekly video by Mr. LaRouche addressing this. And you'll also find with that a discussion among this kind of in the wings, if you want to call it that, body from April 29th that's available in transcript form on both of those sites I can mention. Now, the reason I say that, you've just described a very heartening picture, which is we're getting in parts of the country for reasons we can understand, although there's many new things to it, that people are ready to quickly grasp things, or something that was alien, unreal to them 2 years ago is very real now. But we've also got an activation of enemy types like crazy. At this National Governors Conference, where Miles just was speaking to us from, among the speakers there is none other than Arnold Schwarzenegger himself, the Axeman from California. And tomorrow morning, those of you who are listening today, Saturday, July 10th, but July 11th at 9:30 a.m., the governors are going to hear from this private body called, I forget its name, National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform, that President Obama set up by executive order, not by act of Congress, in, I think, February. And the two co-chairmen, Erskine Bowles and former Senator Alan Simpson, are going to tell the governors how to make more cuts for so-called fiscal responsibility. It's really Nazi economics. So we want you to definitely discuss this side of things. These people are ultra activated because it really is do or die. It's them or us. But what do you want to say about Schwarzenegger? Let me put it that way.
Well, many things, but I don't think some of them I'm allowed to say on the show here. But no, I mean, just to situate it for the listeners, some of whom are probably familiar with this, but it's useful going back over. Schwarzenegger is not a creature of his own. He was vetted by individuals we have written on and that we know very well. Jacob Rothschild, who, by the way, is the creator of this Interalpha banking group system that LaRouche has discussed very often as being the chief sort of arm of the British Empire apparatus. And George Shultz, who some people may remember from the horrors of the George Bush Jr. Administration. So Schwarzenegger is a tool and a creature who was brought in to do exactly what he is doing now. He was brought in to dismantle government and to be the tough guy, or present the tough guy image, who's willing to make these kind of difficult decisions and, you know, sort of brush them off as if it really doesn't affect him. He really can smile while he's wielding this axe and making these cuts, and sort of be the hard ass who can do that and not blink. And that's what he's doing. Hold on one moment.
Right. Well.
So, but just to say a few more things.
Please.
We, the LaRouche Action Committee and LaRouche, in 2003. When there was this dirty political operation to bring Schwarzenegger in the wake of the Enron crisis, in the wake of deregulation, in the wake of people's frustration in California, and present him as this sort of, you know, charismatic movie hero who's now turned political, we fought to prevent this from happening. We put out hundreds of thousands of pamphlets with the title, Who Robbed California? And it had the picture of Schwarzenegger with Lord Jacob Rothschild and Warren Buffett meeting at Rothschild's residence when Schwarzenegger was being vetted and created as this sort of, you know, governator Frankenstein nightmare. And we put this out. We put out the story on Schwarzenegger. We got it out across Los Angeles and across California. I know, actually, from personal evidence, the personal account that I was there in 2003, this was partially the beginning of my involvement with the LaRouche Political Action Committee. And we had rallies. We were going around at night getting literature out on, you know, across the neighborhoods of Los Angeles and California. We were going to events. We had the recall tour where, you know, we traveled up and down the coast with Mervyn Dimily, and we're speaking at different events on who Schwarzenegger is, on how we can't let this guy get brought in, on what he's going to be brought in to do, which is destroy and dismantle public infrastructure and push this line of public-private partnerships, which is really a dismantling, as I said, of public infrastructure, not just in terms of water or roads, but as we can see from what's happening now, everything from children's insurance, social programs for care for the elderly, all of those things we're seeing just be chopped left and right with the line that these are hard times and we have to be willing to scale back and make these kinds of decisions.
Right, and I think that's, you've described what's being peddled in Boston in this brainwashing of these governors, good, bad, or ugly governors. You know, there's a variety, right? But they're all told the same kind of thing. Told by whom? By the forces and powers and medium behind the scenes, political circles that gave Schwarzenegger this role to play. That you said. I mean, you're right. We certainly mobilized to the nth with any resources we had, associates and friends of LaRouche in 2003, to keep Schwarzenegger out. But it wasn't to be. However, now we can, we certainly want to make sure we get rid of him and everyone behind him. The one thing is that you described this. This is the polite name, public-private partnership, for saying, why should you have your own police or your own cleaning service or your own public health clinics? It can be done privately or contracted out or outsourced elsewhere, which is just an excuse for shutting everything down and subverting the country. Do you find, you must find that that's, more people see that now, and it's not so easy to foist it on them, a lot of the local and other government leaders?
Yeah, well, it's a real struggle over the overarching conception of what a nation state is and who these elected officials represent. Do they represent these private interests and these forces that are representative of the British Empire apparatus, as Obama does, or are they going to respond to the kind of mass strike environment that our nation and the world is in right now, where the people of nations, the populations in particular of the United States, are calling for and are yearning for real leadership, as reflected in what Miles brought up in terms of the response they're getting in Boston around the convention and otherwise, where the American people might not necessarily know, in fact, for the most part, don't know or not clear on the solutions to this economic crisis, but they do know that the majority of these lines around public-private partnerships, what's been done to deindustrialize the country, the deregulation of public infrastructure, the outsourcing of jobs and industry, that's something that the majority of the American people are very clear on, that is what has destroyed this country, that process is what has put us where we are now, and that if we are going to get out of this crisis, it's not going to be a matter of some instantaneous monetary trick of bailing out private banks, but that it is going to be in terms of the physical economy, in terms of how to get blue-collar jobs back in this country, how to restore industry. And actually, just to give one a little sort of example of this, after following the interview with Sergio, we had about an hour, 45-minute hour discussion with him where he was, you know, just asking different questions about some of our policy proposals, and he was really honestly asking, how can we get infrastructure back, industry, how can we get industry back in this country? Is that even possible now at this point? And what we are going through is the kind of programs that we've put forward, that we've documented, that Roosevelt had adopted in the 1930s around the Civilian Conservation Corps, which is the retraining or the training of young people in skilled, productive jobs areas by the labor force that still did have skilled knowledge in these kind of technical areas, and how that could be utilized now with those either early retired or going into retirement workers who, you know, did work at auto plants in Detroit or did work at steel or iron working and are now in their 60s, are going into retirement, and that whole generation of knowledge and experience and skill will soon be lost if we don't put it to use. So these kinds of projects and policy orientation is really what people just need to hear. They need to know that this is possible, that it's been done in the past, and that there is a movement which is driving around these very policy solutions with the leadership of LaRouche, who, as he mentioned, is, as he's said, in a position to, in the aftermath of an Obama resignation or impeachment or removal in any way, you know, other than assassination, as he's brought up, the constitutional removal of Obama, that LaRouche and the people he's in dialogue with and has been will be ready to move in and move very quickly with those policy solutions. And right. Just to maybe give a sense of the Glass-Steagall resolution,
because
we kind of talked about it,
mm-hmm.
But just to, you know, expand on that a little bit. The Glass-Steagall, the reason that we're mobilizing around that on the city council level and just in the general population is that it has to be the first step. And that's something that it's really useful to give people a sense that if we want to bring back jobs, blue-collar jobs, if we want to restore industry and infrastructure to this country and a national mission around a renewed space program, a mission to Mars, the only way to accomplish that, the only way to get on that path is to clean up and wipe out this British Empire private financier parasitical apparatus that right now is sucking off of our nation and other nations to keep itself going. And it's really coming out of not just the pockets, not just the money of the American taxpayer. It's coming out of their livelihood. It's coming out of their lives. All these cuts, the Obama health care reform, all of that is a facilitation of this bailout. So the bailout's not just money in that sense. It really is the squeezing of the physical economy to pour, you know, to feed this ever-hungry monster. So until we stop that process and begin to take back control of our national banking institutions, there is no way that we can direct the credit to these kinds of infrastructure and development projects. And that in a broader sense is what the Glass-Steagall is. In the historical sense, the Glass-Steagall Act was legislation passed in 1933 under the Roosevelt administration in the wake of the 29 stock market crash and the whole Great Depression period, which effectively created a firewall or a separation between private investment banking, monopoly money gains on Wall Street, and commercial banking functions of the country. And that prevented the type of speculation by private interests using the deposits and mortgages and pensions of the population for their own gambling purposes, which is what we, you know, what everybody's seen happening in the last years, which has resulted in this unfolding mess that we're still in right now. And that's also what brings the passage of the renewal of the Glass-Steagall Act, the Glass-Steagall legislation, would also allow for the immediate freezing of the trillions of dollars of toxic waste that is right now being treated as though it has some real monetary value, when in terms of reality, which is LaRouche's physical economics, it's not even just worthless paper, it's actually negative in value. So the fact that we're trying to bail this out, or that these institutions are too big to fail, is one of these great swindles, a big lie. And so the Glass-Steagall would allow for those derivatives, that negative value financial paper trash, to be frozen, to be thrown into a dumpster somewhere and locked up, and also allow for the Federal Reserve, which is full of this toxic waste, to be taken into a kind of a bankruptcy reorganization process, which would result in the creation of a healthy third national banking system, which could be the vehicle for issuing and directing credit into smaller federally chartered banks and state banks for direction into these kinds of infrastructure projects. And there's we've discussed this before, but there's all kinds of projects just waiting for the political will to allow them to get into motion. So
right.
This is we really could be moving in that direction very quickly, very soon.
That's right.
If we're successful in this fight.
Thank you for summing it up in that way. And I will acknowledge a couple of emails, Tarana, that came in. Actually, at least one came in advance of knowing the topic you were going to address. So I just acknowledge that Richard in Texas was saying among the looting ways, he was just adding specifics about how people have been more and more burdened by municipalities trying to find more ways to get revenue. So they increase fines or fees or levies, or homeowners who can't pay their mortgage anyway have to pay more insurance. In other words, everyone's facing a straw that breaks their camel's back. Senior citizens, I don't know that there's a special question in there, but I know that it relates to the fact that you've been saying, or that you know in detail different localities in Los Angeles County, how they were down to one fire truck or no fire trucks, or it's just the end of the line, I guess you could put it that way, for both households and their local governments, right?
Yes, yeah, and especially, I mean, this really, again, validated for me the forecast that LaRouche made.
Why don't you go into that a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was, but maybe a month ago or so, that he came out with this statement on the June-July period being a point of qualitatively increased acceleration of the breakdown crisis. And that's really what we're seeing directly firsthand at these city council meetings. And as you mentioned earlier, with the reneging on the continuation of the unemployment benefits for around 2 million people across the country. And we're seeing that hitting right now, right in this period now. That's, you know, what I mentioned with the case of the police and the whole Maywood situation. It's happening, as you mentioned, Pasadena, with their fire force, where they had to cut the amount of fire engines, so now there's only one available for the whole area of Pasadena, which, you know, right at the height of the fire season, and the potential of what could happen is already exemplified by what we saw in New York, this case in New York, where they had to throw everything at this fire, then in a building burning down a half a city block, and they threw everything they could, everything they had at it, and including people coming from surrounding areas to help. And that's the kind of thing that's just the very literally the straw and the, you know, dry stuff is just waiting for the spark to set this thing off. And, you know, that's just in the case of fire, but there's everything. In the case of Glendale, the fire force was taking, denying a pay increase that they had gotten by contract 2 years ago. They've denied it for 2 years so that they aren't cut in terms of their force or furloughs or their fire engines or anything like that, so they can try to continue to address and have the proper security requirements and conditions to address any kind of fires that come up and the safety of the firemen themselves, who, you know, if you lose a few firemen or if there's more guys on furlough or that kind of thing, there's a bunch of studies out on how much that decreases the safety and the effectiveness of those individuals to be able to deal with the situation. So, and this is, I mean, these are just, you know, sort of little snapshots, but this is happening everywhere, and it's happening in all levels of the cities. And these people, for instance, who are losing their unemployment benefits, what about their families? What if they have children? Where are they going to go? If they go to live with their family members, how is that going to have a ripple effect? So it's not just that these people are, you know, going to be out of a check every month now. It has rippling effects for the entire situation, which increases sort of the instability and the potential for a real explosion. And that's why our leadership is so important. So as Miles said, people are really, they are pissed off, and rightfully they're frustrated and angry. But if we don't present that, if we fail to present the leadership and really move people on a higher idea, it can result in the kind of, you know, French Revolution scenario, and we don't want that.
Right. And in fact, that's the second question. I acknowledge an email from Brian in California. You're part of the world, Tirana, because he wonders, how can Obama be got out? Don't you need a consensus among the general population and the military? He's looking at situations of, but of course, the mass strike is across the mood. The people are affected all across every institution, including within the military.
Oh, but, yeah, there. I mean, I've talked to several individuals in the military who reflect what happened with General McChrystal and the remarks that he made as sort of a voice for the sentiment in the military. And they're pissed off. This Afghanistan policy is insane, and they're being sent there to protect the drug crop.
Right. And the other...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the same thing you have, but, you know, the people in Coast Guard Reserve, not to mention Navy, and the Gulf of Mexico, I can't tell, you know, there are things that they don't say publicly, but there is a wave of what you described, revulsion at the fact of we've got an alien policy in the White House. And that brings me to my last question. We have barely half a minute, but people, how they're looking at Obama, Tirana, I mean, this has shifted over the last couple of years, but this very past week, Mr. Obama was in Kansas City or somewhere saying we're going to have an export initiative because we have to export more to the produce better to export around the world. Well, of course, we need to produce for here in our we need to produce, period. But then yesterday he spoke again in Nevada in now no more particulars, because all he can say is we created 50 jobs for solar panels somewhere. But he says
it beyond was, actually battery powered trucks.
OK, that's it. Battery powered vehicles.
Yeah.
But now he's even not using any particulars because he can't. It's just we have to have change, look to the future, have hope, so forth and so on. But you've got a real – people are changing in their outlook, I presume, in their evaluation of him.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows that Obama's fate is sealed. The question is when, and will he take the nation down with him, or will we send him on his way down to hell or wherever he's going to go after he leaves the White House, and will we pick up and take this American Revolution forward to rebuilding our nation and giving something far better to our children and their children's children than what we have now.
Well, that is the right note, I think. And we want everyone to pitch in with money, with time, go to these campaigns, do what you have to where you are. And so that's going to conclude. I thank Tarana Dorsey very much from Los Angeles. That's going to conclude our July 10th, 2010 show. And listen, July 17th, Harley Schlanger will be the host. And things are happening very fast. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much for the LaRouche Show.
Thanks, Marcia.
Thank you.